Hi there. Conversation number four, I think, with Maike, my most wonderful friend who lives in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. We have meandered down different paths. We've meandered through the floods of Germany and the Netherlands, and the floods of hate and then love directed at these young kids who scored or did not score the penalty goals for England in the recent, was it European World Cup, I think? I'm not very soccer oriented. We talk about hope, we talk about openness and inner aspects, inner characters, where my therapy has really made me like see more what used to be maybe a set of just six base color has turned into 12. 24, 48, you know, it's like it's evolving. And what the outcome of that is, what happens as a result of that work that I'm doing, it's not something that I'm doing it for. I'm not doing it for the result, but there is a result. There always is a counter movement to every movement. So join us for this real conversation, which start off by Maike is saying, oh, I'm so nervous that I won't have anything of value to say. And I think you'll see she has loads of value to say. So join us. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know, but I'm good.
I just got a friend. I have Siggy the dog sleeping or laying on the floor beneath me. We're dog sitting for a few days and he just arrived.
Like, yeah, that's where you want your friends beneath you.
On the floor, quiet, perfect, yes. When it's a little dog, it's actually quite good.
Oh, wow.
He's a sweetheart. Yeah.
And you're a sweetheart as well in helping someone else with the babysitting?
Yes.
And then the dog and the cat are going well together?
Yeah, well, you know, it's Pop the cat is a special cat, so he can tolerate most things. And he doesn't shy away from dogs. He doesn't, you know, he can look at them and go, oh man, you're obnoxious, because the dog just wants to, you know. But I mean, he doesn't run away. He doesn't stay away. So he can flaunt himself in front of the dog too and just kind of go, here I am. Yeah, so it's fine. And Siggy has been here. We've dog sat him ever since he was two, three months or something like that, a couple of times a year. So he's quite happy to be here and he loves me. He was so thrilled to see me. We dog sat him. Was it last weekend too? Not this weekend, but last weekend. So a week and a half ago. So he was like, okay, now I'm back.
That's good. Yeah. Helena, listen, I through time, I've learned to start where I am.
That's a very good idea.
Yes, so where I am, I'm nervous, I guess. All of a sudden, we've talked for hours already, and now I'm nervous. And I'm in the grip of... It has to do because maybe this time you will discover I have nothing to say.
Possibly. But I find it highly unlikely. So far, it's never happened between you and me, has it?
Yes, but something is growing, you know. So my reputation is now turning towards me and is laughing me in the face. Oh, babe, come on, tell another interesting thing, and then. It's probably you know it, and it's old, and maybe I know it's not true, but I'm living it right now. So in a few moments, I will be discovered for the fraud I am.
I think you're describing something that is oh so common, don't you think? This imposter syndrome, this I'm a fake, I'm a fraud, I'm not supposed to be here, soon I will be found out.
And that starts to fight immediately with another one, that I want to be the best and the most original, the origin of the originality. And now I keep myself hostage.
Yeah. So what do you do when you're beset by these inner characters, inner voices? How do you deal with it? What do you do? Do you deal with it?
Let's talk about the past. Probably I behaved like a baby. So a while back it was when I moved houses and I ended the relationship, and then another hell journey starts. And then I remember the moment when friends helped me change houses, move a house. And then I was there 3 high in Amsterdam and sitting on the wooden, old, ugly wooden planks, that wood. And literally sitting, and I saw myself as a baby. So standing on wobbly legs, and then you see a baby, a pampered one, a West European one, and it falls on its
bum,
but it's pampered. You know, there is still a lot of pampers around the cheeks. So, but I felt myself like one, and that was in 2005-06. And I literally, by then I was 56. And it's quite an experience to feel like a baby when you're a 56-year-old baby. And I really had to start walking and using my hands. and using my hands, I'm still in the process. How do I deal with it? What's a bit difficult is when I'm in it, there is nothing else. So I'm totally filled up. And it pushes awareness, let's say, and let's call it consciousness, out of the building. So I'm fully in it. But yeah, I guess the opening out is breathing. And coming into my body and the breath will...
But is that true, though? Is it true? I mean, if what you say is true, then now coming into this conversation, you are not fully in it because you are aware of that voice. Right? Because if consciousness and awareness has been pushed out of the building, then you're in it in such a way that you don't know that you're in it because you're in it. You're like the fish in water, having no idea that he's in water because he just is.
Yes, and now I come closer because, this is so fun, being with you is just that, being with you, with no masks, for me, and opening up and being nude, but in on all levels. Mm. And that's it. Now I know. That's it. So that's the fear. That's the fear and the you. So I'm this is what I do a lot of the time. I'm a musician. I can make the world as I like it. So, and how I like it is, now I lost track. This point is very, very important because what I know there is, life force, and it's not outside, it's I'm also a carrier, let's say, of that, and that's it. There is not much more, and what I do is a lot of the time I block that force because I'm not willing to surrender, to let it flow, and so I pretend I'm the chauffeur. I want to steer the wheel. And again, I become aware that with you, I like our conversations, our meandering conversation, and it's close to that, let's call it the direct stream. Hmm.
It's this, I get emotional. And I think I get emotional because the last few weeks have been weeks where it's gotten to be so apparent to me that some people can be like, they're like wormholes for me, you know, in space which is this where you're in one space and go through a wormhole and you end up in a galaxy like a gazillion light years away, but it's taken no time. It's like some people are wormholes or conduits for me to access this life force, direct stream, that place where everything is so much more acute in the sense of it's felt, it's experienced, it's like not diluted, it's raw or pure or something. And I've thought about this because I have a sense that the inner observer in me is a very active one. It's like it's there all the time. So I can, as I experience, I also observe myself experiencing. And sometimes I wonder if there's also a character that kind of hooks arms with the observer, but without the observer really knowing that he's dragging along this other little creature, which is a creature that kind of is this prim little school teacher lady who, you know, she knows the theory of it all. She knows what's supposed to be, how you're supposed to be, how you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to feel, and is kind of, you know, it's like a, what do you call them? In Swedish, it's called sufflera. So in the theater, old time, there was a little person sitting there ready to give the line, whisper the lines. If the actors on stage lost it, she would whisper, "You're saying this," you know, or whatever it was, right? She's kind of like that. She's kind of like whispering to me what I'm supposed to do instead of being with where I am at the moment. And I have the sense that now and again, it's like she tosses out one of her lines, hooks me, you know, it's like a fishing rod. She hooks me in the back of my, and she's like waving me in, stopping me from going fully into feeling what it is that I'm about to start to feel. And I had that experience, and then Dominic called me a couple of weeks ago and asked me one question, and that hook just flew away, and I just went down into that feeling that I had kind of been avoiding for a week and just immersed in it, and tears, you know, it's like, So I wonder at that. Is that a way to, is that a way where I'm kind of stopping myself from going naked in front of myself?
I guess for me, that would be the case for me. And probably this one, the souffleur, she has a sister, and the sister is living in Amsterdam.
She lives at Micah's place.
Yeah. And are you familiar with Kim Amourette?
No.
I know her from, it's one of your Facebook friends. That's such a lovely woman. Anna
Briggs-Thompson, yeah.
And she was writing something, and when I'm down or need help, then I turn to Kim Amourette, and she works with quantum change, kinesiology, and it's beautiful. She's one, Kim, also, she's one of those women. You start with her, and she knows, she feels, she goes in the galaxies. And now again, I lost track. Oh yeah, and she is, when I started with her, she learned me about, or I derived it. She was talking about personality designs. And I have a few of mine are the caregiver, the inspirator. And I realized this is what we, or what I do, we create this kind of, let's call it, aspect, just as a barrier against this pure flow of life energy. And I was so shocked. And then I realized through the day, and it's my default mode to protect, and I'm not aware of it. Just to, like now, I'm saying I trust you, but in a way where I'm not aware, I don't trust you. Otherwise, why would I take a bit of fear energy into this conversation? So for me, you are talking about there is an observer, and for me, when I'm, let's call it the zone, when I'm in the zone, I'm not aware that I'm in the zone, and there is no observer. It's, let's call it a field. And I know I've been there only afterwards. Whoa, keep going. It becomes a on top of the wave. Then there are no aspects anymore.
So what's a zone experience? Can you give me an example?
In the past, when I'm in front of people to train or something, and I, there she goes. Or you, for instance, a while back when you started to speak for a large group of people. That, yeah, that then you're in it and you're doing it. And it's a difference between steering and flowing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm just like, I wonder about these, if these aspects of us, you said that they were a protection of sorts, a way to keep out of or keep away from that life force. And that makes me wonder, it's like, is this a defect? You know, it's like we're not supposed to have these aspects, these identities or character traits of the caretaker or inspirator or whatever you want to be, what you feel like you are. Or is it, this is the way it's designed to make it possible to live in the physical world, because we also live in the physical world and there's like practical hands-on things that needs to happen. And what about Sigge? Is like, does he have, you know, do other creatures just live in the life force, or are they also like, okay, it's like there's this polarity of kind of the divine, of that, the flow aspect, and then there's the physical, earthly, we're bound here, kind of get things done, practicalities of it.
I don't know, but I like to pretend I know. What pops up is the sign of the yin and yang. Mm. You can't imagine it without the other. Mm. So right now, it's a package, and I guess I like to think that divinity without humanity would be bought stiff or something. And so divinity needs humanity so it can express itself through humanity. Mm. And like for me, that's difficult when I have opinions about myself. I have mean thoughts of something to in it is divinity as well. You can't, this is divine and this is human. Now, right? So I'm raised in that. And if I behaved well, so that culture was really forcing the aspects really strong. I'm raised as a Catholic girl. So to ingrain it, this is good, labeling it, this is bad. So it, you start with a split. You can't own your supposedly bad thoughts. This is, let's say, new for me in my case, in this time frame of evolution, it's like this. We are not raised and we grow up with aspects. And I really think that the new human will be born or is born already. When you see some little ones.
Was it Maya Luna in the Mythic Masculinity podcast who spoke about good and bad? Or did I get that from somewhere else? Because I remember reading or hearing, it might have been somebody else on Instagram. So this you know, I've been in my deep dive into shame, I've been the good girl versus the bad girl sort of duality has popped up. With the good girl being so lauded, being so applauded, being so heralded and encouraged and like in all ways, this is what you're supposed to be. And then the bad girl is then kind of the human aspect of wanting to, you know, experience, to enjoy, to be in pleasure, to do the things that good girls aren't supposed to do. And I've been kind of stepping into that, exploring that. And this, if it was Maya Luna or if it was somebody else, was saying, step out of it. Don't step into that. You know, you don't have to go into the good-bad dichotomy in a way. You can step out of it. It's not good. It's not bad. It is. You know, it's like, don't label the desires, the pleasures, the wanting to stay up late, wanting to do shit and stuff you're not supposed to when you're a good girl. Don't, you know, it's like, don't step into those labels. Just step out of them. And I just went, huh. Because I think it is this... it's a boxing in. And then I will, you know, it's like, okay, I've tried the good girl. That doesn't really work. I'm trying the bad girl. Well, that doesn't really work either. Okay, I'm trying both. That doesn't really work because there's more. It's like it's a boxing in of something that cannot, should not, must not be boxed in. That is bigger, larger, and kind of defies... labeling or explaining.
I guess you finished speaking.
Yeah.
But I guess you can go in it. But for me, there's always the question, the four question, who? It's not what you do, but who are you in that moment? So if you want to go in and you want to be an anthropologist or an explorer, perfect, and being curious, and that's perfect. But the outcome is totally different, as if you're in it, and then you're one moment and you're good girl, bad girl. But yeah, for me, it's constructed by an inner world. And an outer world, and then the inner world. So you're not in truth. It's a play. It's a theater play. And then when you're all on a quest towards truth, well, you can stay there for 1,000 years and pretend you find some truth. So I guess it could be a bit of fun if like an explorer. Well, I had an experience a while back, and it's about what did I do? It's you sit and then you close your eyes and then you look down and then you open them and you look at the objects around you. And then you realize inside objects there is movement. There will be one moment when one of the objects crumbles, let's say call it that, crumbles to dust. So for me that was so spectacular. So if I can feel a movement, I can feel something inside of me. But I didn't realize that there's also movement in the table. So all around you, things in it is a kind of movement. And the movement in the table is much, much slower than in me. This table will be here for 1,000 years, maybe. But there will be, and then it collapses. So, okay, wow, so there is movement. And then I was standing next to a river, and the river was moving, and then there was me, and I was trying to label myself. So by labeling the river, and it wasn't possible. And then all of a sudden, I started to experience and see myself as a landscape, as a blob. So it's always moving. It's like this. It helped me tremendously. So I'm aware when I'm labeling myself.
Yeah, I think I am too, but I think that I'm getting to know it's like the different characters within me that you know, it's like, okay, now I'm this character, now I'm this character, now I'm this character. You know, it's like we shift because, you know, if somebody were to come in, well, then I would, okay, now who, you know, do I need to be of service to someone or et cetera? And then with you, I can kind of strip off and or go into observer mode or whatever. I'm getting... It's as if I listened to a pod with Seth Godin yesterday, and he was talking about million-dollar words. And he said, words matter. For an artist to go from the 12, you know, for a kid to go from the 12-colored Crayola set to the 64-color Crayola set, you know, the world is expanded because you go from 12 colors to 64. If you then go to 224 or whatever, it's like even more. You get more nuances. You get more. And each of those colors has a name, has a label. And an artist needs more. They have much, much, much more words for colors than, or a painter, let's say, you know, they have more words for colors than I do because I'm not a painter. I don't need that. But they need, in order to really make it as kind of, it's a way of fine-tuning. It's a way of getting closer and closer to the truth. And I feel that in this past year, I've when it comes to my inner characters, I've like gone from the 12 color Crayola set to the 64 color Crayola set. I'm seeing them clearly, and they're, you know, it's like they used to be, you know, red. Right? It's like, oh no, within that red there's nuances, there's little quirks, and you know, it's like, so there's a I see it, and there's a greater quality to how I look at the labels that I use when it comes to me somehow. It's a finer quality, if that makes sense. And so somebody might listen to this and go, oh my God, how egocentric of her, and you know, how egotistical. She's just obsessed with herself and herself and herself and herself. And it's like, in a sense, yes, I am curious about me. And I feel that the more curious I am about me, the more I discover about me, the easier it is for me to see others. Because my is like, I've gone from, you know, being zoomed out and it's being very distant, like it's a zooming in of sorts where I can see people clearer because I've been doing the work in me, kind of. So I experience it as kind of the outcome with bunny ears turns into me having an easier time to be of service out in the world, if that makes sense.
Yes. And it doesn't need to lead to the last one, as if it, this is fine-tuning, as if you need that almost as an excuse. For me, when I look out in the world, and when I'm then, when I'm not aware, I really don't know what to do, to scream and feeling heard. And so I the same as you, and I start to think I'm so self-centered, and look at me here in my own apartment, and then I know this is mine to do, like what you do. The world isn't outside, the world is in, and that's it, and that's on my plate. And that's what I have to do. And it's not about if I do this, I can help the world or something. No, the world in this way doesn't move anyhow. The world is as it is. And for me, what I, my next step, what I can feel, I feel you so much when you, because when you're in your, let's say, in your aspects, one of the most nice thing those aspects wants to do is to project. They can't do anything but project. So the your view becomes more clear, the projection disappears. Or then the observe of the awareness, when you do it, it's a, oh, wait, look at me, what I'm doing right now. And now it's blank. But for me, this is important. I become a bit like that when I hear I need to save the world.
Yeah, and I'm that's not at all. It's like the outcome. That's why I put it in bunny ears. You know, it's like it's not. I'm not doing it because of it will lead to this. It's like I'm doing this, and as a result of me doing that, there is an outcome. It's like the laws of physics, you know, every whatever those laws of physics say, in every motion there's a counter motion, whatever. You know, it's like I'm doing this, and as a result of me doing this, things happen, things pop up, yes. Things, you know, there is a counter movement to my movement, because there always is a counter movement to my movement. It's kind of like, you know, people speak about meditation and how it's not the sitting for 15 minutes in silence. That's the thing, right? It is what happens in the next 23 hours, 45 minutes of the day as a result of you sitting for 15 minutes. That's where you will see the results, right? But you don't, or I don't sit because, oh, this will make me, you know, be better at responding when my kid says or does, or, you know, it's like, no, but that's a result. It leads to that, or can lead to that. But I do it because I do it, kind of. I do it because I cannot not do it. And I like the exploring. I like the questing, as you say, this type of what's there. And it's fascinating. You know, I've done, I don't know, 30 plus therapy sessions now since like November or something. And it's just been, I can't imagine. There's new characters popping up every now and again. And it's like, where have they been before? Why haven't they shown up before? It's like, now they pop up. I'm 49, you know? It's like, and I would say that this is precisely what happens, because I've gone from the 12-colored crayon set to the 64-colored crayon set. It's like, what used to look like one is actually now splitting into three characters or five, you know? It's like, oh man, there's a width of stuff to discover.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've found aspects of me, because I think that's quite a good word, actually. I found aspects of me that on the surface of it, I could very easily just say, oh no, that's bad. I shouldn't have that. That's not good. That doesn't serve me. That's, you know, it's like, okay, we need to get rid of this. We need to prune it away. We need to cut it down, shut it up. But it hasn't been like that. It's more been like, oh, this is so interesting. What, you know, it's like, what is it that they might be having a voice initially, but what's behind that? What's the intention behind that? Where does it really, you know, so it's been really a fleshing out of these aspects of me and kind of finding at the root of all of them that it's, you know, they show up not to hurt me, not to cut me down. It's like, that's not why they're there. It is this divine human play, right? It's like, okay, let's toss in one of these and see what happens type of feelings, where it's like, there's something here. What's the value in this? And when did it really serve me? And can it still serve me? And when and how? And can I, you know, it's like, it's really interesting.
Beautiful. Do you find at the root of it, and let's label some of them good and some of them bad, I find the same things at the root of it.
Yeah. I would say, generally, yes. Sometimes it's easier to find at the root of it, they're serving me. At the root of it, they are there to serve me, to help me, to guide me, to show me, to test me. You know, it's like, but all in a manner of like kind of fleshing me out. Like, okay, where are you in this? How is this working? Some of them kind of scare me to start with. I found a couple of months ago, I found the general within. And it was like, ooh, scary character here, you know? But we kind of stayed with it and saw what's, how does she serve me? What's her purpose? And then I usually have aspects or characters that show up in female form. And I had one male form a couple of months ago too. That was just, oh, a little weakling. You know, shy, weak, insecure, like kind of like, you know, when you shake somebody's hand and they meet you with a floppy fish hand, it's like that at its worst. It was like, I don't want to have this character within. Shit. It's like, and we were kind of dancing with him, looking at seeing what's the message from him then? You know, what's, how does he bring value to me, to my life? And it was just so interesting to go from this, ugh, totally being revolted by this, you know, sapling of a man, just not a man, just, to seeing, oh, here's a message here. There's what does this signify in me? What is it in me that I'm so repelled by, that I'm looking at as if it's weak? It's, you know, it's like just really, really, quite extraordinary to see how my perception of it shifts as I kind of step into the character and am in it with it, to see that there's a gift here too. It is really cool. It is, I mean, shit, we're the things we can kind of make up within, right? It's like there's so much stuff. It's like a never-ending theater. It just, you know, it's just constantly something is created within, and you can just find it, and it's been there for a long time, but you just stumble upon it now. It's like, oh, the spotlight shines on this aspect, this facet. It's super interesting, I must say, to do this thing. And I saw the other day in my last session, I realized I did my first round of therapy 15 years ago or something in 2006. I think I started seven maybe. And I remember then too that I spoke about it to friends, to family, to my husband. You know, it's like, so for me, this speaking about what it is that I'm experiencing and discovering when I'm in therapy or whatever it is, I get to, it kind of solidifies into something that I can look at from different angles and explore even more when I'm talking about it or writing about it, because I write it all down too, you know. So it's like one therapy session, that's the seed, and then it just sprouts, right? And I can harvest and I can prune and I can take a, what do you call that? I can propagate it, you know, I can cut it off and take away two leaves and put it into a new pot and see what will happen here, right? And I realized the other day, I do that. I do that with many things. I think that's why I speak about the books I read or about the podcasts I listen to or, you know, the work I do, because it's a way for me to process what I'm doing and help make, I wouldn't say understand, but kind of make sense of the world that is mine. Yeah. So, saying that, when I then have these moments of when I feel weak or wounded or tiny or hurt, and that the tag-along creature to the souffleur, the person that's, you know, telling me, oh no, not you, you shouldn't be weak, you shouldn't be hurt, you shouldn't, you know, it's like the voice of reason, of rationality, in a sense. When I let myself say, no, you're off the hook right now. I don't need you in your little tiny booth. You can go have dinner or sleep or take a week's vacation. You know, let me. Like I need to go deeper into those aspects, because there's other aspect that she's like, she's very happy that I'm feeling into other things, but these, the ones where I'm kind of going, I don't know, weak, hurt, sad, grief. That's when she kind of steps in and stops the flow. That's when she hooks me and tries to pull me back. It's like, no, I need to unhook from her and really sense into that.
Thank you.
And it's like I'm lucky, even though I know I'm not, you know, it's like it's not, it just didn't happen or it didn't just happen. It's like I've created it. I'm so lucky to have people around me whom I can do this with, whom I can continue my exploration with.
Yeah. Lucky ones.
Yeah. I think that ties into what we were speaking about last time, about this, where I might feel shame saying something vulnerable or naked or something, but with you and others, that doesn't stop me from doing it. That doesn't stop me from saying it. It's like I can say it in the company of some people. I can say it even though the shame is there. And had it been somebody else, the shame might have and probably would have stopped me from saying. Right? So finding, really making sure you have people like that in your life. Oh, that's vital.
Yes. And for me, who I am now, for me, it's vital that you share it. You in a way, I need it. In if you don't and it's there, then it's, let's say, behind your back, and I will feel it, not consciously, yes. But it will block our dance together.
Yes.
So in these dances, it you take away not only something from you, but also from me, from your partner. It will put a top on
Yeah, it's like the glass ceiling.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I love. So I find it so special how it's created or something. It's so like what you're telling about 12 crayons and the 45 crayons. It's but when you come into, when you, that's the most important step from the 12th to the 13th. Yes. To realize, you think it's the ceiling. So that's an enormous, a huge step. And then lost again. What was I talking about?
You were talking about the step that makes the move from 12 crayons to more possible.
Yes, I lost track, but it has to do with being open, the willingness of both partners to stop projection and to open up, to become trembling again, you know, and to tremble and to bring that into the meeting. And that's also, I saw a man and a woman making love together. Sorry, I use man and a woman. But it's also in intimacy and sexuality, it's more, the slightest thing you hold back will come into the field, you know. And I find it so special that when you do it, only then deeper layers will become available. And that's what I wanted to say. When you're on a path, and it's only now after a while that new aspects turn up, and they can turn up because of you were willing to meet with other ones who were, let's say, on top of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this openness I find interesting. I've been pondering openness for a while. Realizing that I'm drawn to people who are open to. There's a 13th crayon, you know, it's like that aspect, like not the, no, 12 is fine. We don't need any more, you know, no, totally boring. It's like, there's no pull for me there. There's no energy that's, you know, kind of going woo over there and makes me go, oh, I want to see what's there. But people who are open to that, I'm drawn in, curious about, fascinating to see, to hear, you know, what's the 13th color that you found? Or the 256th color, you know, it's like going there. And I wonder at that trait, I wonder at that aspect, at that character. Because I don't know that we're, like, who are we? Are we societally, are we encouraging this openness, or are we rather encouraging the glass ceiling? It's 12. That's enough. You don't need more. And the you know, it's like, if I pretend to know all of those other crayons, those other colors, if I'm pretending to be open, but I have the answer, I know there's 64 and not a color more, you know, I can play along for a while, but then it's like, maybe that's kind of what I see in society, this playing along a little bit, but it's like we're just indulging. The curiosity of others, but I still sit with the answer somehow. I know it will never find a 65th color. You know, you can play around. I don't know. There's something to how we're how we are in society that speaks to this.
Yeah, but what comes up, two things. There are some, and they know about the 13th, etc. And if they are not willing to, let's call it the work, then they pick up their toolbox, and they take it with them. So there isn't a real transformation. And then they're playing with that from an old paradigm. And then they use the same things. So that's a play. But for me, there are a lot of people and they are very sure, and it's from 1 to 12. And when you speak from the 13th, then you become a wappy or whatever. when you were talking about it, there was one word that popped up, and that was the word success. And that's extreme. That's the church. That's the utmost. That's one of the pillars between 1 and 12. So you have to be successful. And the people in it, yeah, they thrive on that. That's the utmost, being successful. But for being that, that's only one path. And to be alive and streaming, you have 1,000 paths and streams. Mm-hmm. But in the successful, there's only one. And it's a God that asks a lot of you to suffer, to let go of a real relationship with your wife, because you need to be on your working place, etc., etc. And it needs a lot of projection. It needs a lot of unmatured aspects of yourself. And so I guess that when you're in the top, now I'm talking black and white, when you're in the top, you're almost as if you need to dehumanize yourself.
Yes.
And so that's dehumanize, becoming human again and become more human. For me, that's the transformation. There isn't an outer world. It's willingly open up to your inside and feel the fear, me God, at what I'm finding here. And go on that journey. And there is, for me, there is gold. And there is dirt and pain and whatever. But it's, I guess, success is killing us. And there is something, there is a field, an other field with another label, or not a label, but it's not success. So asking people living their lives, their difficult, beautiful lives, and at the end, have you been successful? And it's so small, you know. So if at the end, when there is Petrus and you want to go into heaven, and he's asking you, how many cars do you have? How many women did you fuck? Wow. Okay.
But it's interesting. There's somebody on Twitter who usually tweets every morning saying, good morning, future millionaires and billionaires. And I go, every time I haven't said anything, but every time I look at that and I think, why? You know, why would I want to be? You know, what's the value of that? It's like billionaire, millionaire, really? It's like, it speaks to what you're saying, because I'm guessing it is sent from an energy where, you know, it's like Go, do your work, play at the success ladder, right? It's like invest, work hard, save, you know, scrimp, whatever it is. It's like do it, do it, do it. You can do it. You can become a billionaire. Okay. And then what? What's there?
Yeah, for me, you make me realize we are billionaires. I am one. And if I look, let's say, before and after in my discovering the 13th trion, I feel a billionaire. I guess there's nothing wrong with being a billionaire, but for me, it can't be a goal. For me, it's still possible in that sense, you become a billionaire. That's possible, but it's for me, it's important. It can come as a byproduct. If you become or connect with your true nature and you go woof on that, and nothing wrong with this earning money, but if it's only it's at the cost of all, and I'm happy I can say now because there are a few women and it. All of a sudden, they come together. You are one of them, and there is Kaya Yivon, and there is Anna, and there is a new one, and I don't know her name. And those women, they write, and they rip everything apart, so everything that blocks truth, and you even what you said, you even if it's you talk about poo or whatever, if it's invisible and you show yourself physically naked, dive it, and you see whatever you don't shrink back, and one of the women. Unfortunately, I don't remember the name. She wrote a post, Facebook post, and it's about people in working places, they have it, it's hard to be there. And they have to do the same work with less and less people. And now employers have understood something about the 30s, and they are forcing those people in set a goal and be positive and etc. So they use something of the words, but only in the same construct of be successful, earn money for me, and give till you burnt out. And that's a bit sorry for you, but I will choose another one. You go home and I choose another one. And I find it, wow, it speaks so to my heart. And so then employers are asking people to dehumanize with words you and I know and use. Instead of, and it's and so an organization needs to go as well, the same transition, become human again. And that's something, become human in organizations, Rua. But yet, you know, I love it. I love it. That kind of new energy. And that's funny, becoming what we are or who we are. Such a struggle, such a journey. Human.
Yeah. Has it always been a struggle? Has all people all the time struggled to be again that which we already are? Or is it something that's peaking now? Is it, it's like we've come so far away from that which we are. There is so much dehumanizing going on.
For me, I see it as an evolution. So we live in this certain time frame, and it's and for me, it's not like this.
Straight.
Yeah, it's flexible. You need it in wood. You want when you want to put it together, so it can move.
Gongyan. Okay. Yeah. It's a hinge.
Yes, probably. So we're in ancient time. Probably 10 years, 20. Wow, 2021. That was the year. So everything is evolving. The earth is evolving, and I guess where we come from is from the plains and walking in small groups and not able to talk like that. So, wow, we evolved to what we are now. And so a bit of gratitude to stand on the shoulders of. And now we are here and we are confronted or with the problems who are facing us now, and I see a huge evolution in that, and living in the Middle Ages, you didn't blink an eye to cut your hand or more, or to torture people. Wow, that's how many 500 years ago. And then, yeah, about rural and then the industry and then thoughts, the part of I am because I think, whoa. And then probably some wheels started to turn from in the factories, and the trains, and maybe something was lost or we didn't had it yet. But then money came in. We couldn't live our own life. We started to need others for our clothes and our food. So, but then something came in, or it was already there, and money. Maybe, I don't know if it wasn't before that, but if you look at a human being as lesser than you, or I can use it to build my car factory, yeah, it's the end, you know, and that's moving. Maybe that's the aspect of society. And it needs to go through the same work you are doing. And now for me a lot of people become awake and they say, stop, this is not what I want. This is not what we want. And we want it differently. So yeah, and different people, different kind of people will emerge simultaneously. What I'm told, there will be a robot people, a sort of robot is starting to emerge, to evolve. So, and when you look at those, in a few, they are so real, so real. So, is it a human being? And then there are humans who get implanted with certain things. And then for me, I feel so much of you being here at the same time for me. That's life-giving. It keeps me from becoming crazy. And people like you, so like-minded people. And there are so many, so many across the world. And they are bubbling up.
Yeah, it's listening to you speak, it's like I get filled with a sense of hope. That is kind of, you know, skipping along down the road together with adventure and fascination and thrill and a bit of trepidation. It's like, how will this play out, you know? But I think that's I was in a Twitter thread the other day when the Germany floodings were at their peak. And I was saying something about the need for a paradigm shift, you know? The culture of modern man has to sort of, in a sense, fall in line again, realizing that we are not above nature. We are part of, we are in it. We are submitted to the same rules as every other creature. And somebody was saying something that they were just, you know, they had lost all hope. And I, you know, it's like I was kind of taking that in, feeling into that. And it's like, I can't go there. Sure, I can feel helpless or hopeless or, you know, it's never going to work or it's a disaster. But I can't stay there. Because then I might as well just not be here. You know, it's like I can't stay in that energy because that energy doesn't, there is no movement in that energy for me. It's like it's just dark black hole. So I can dip into it, but I dip out of it. I get out of it because I can't stay there because I want the life force. It's like it's not in there. That's not where that life force is. I can't be there.
And it's there, but you have to open up a bit and to see the third crayon. When you hear about the troubles in Germany and Holland, also it was horrible, and is one part and the other part, something happened, something opened up, and people, egoistical people who like me, first me, they became selfish.
Mm.
They worked a bit off from Holland, from the top of Holland, people went to Limburg to help, to do the dirty work. And I have people I know there, and they have a restaurant. And it was so, so, oh, it's horrible. And they kept, wow, they stayed out of it. And they have a Mexican restaurant. And then in one moment to the other, they turned around and they started to cook food and make a coffee. And they spread it out all over the city. And when other people heard about it, companies, they started to give that man storage. Give it. So he started. It's blossoming. People smiled and breathed and became what they truly are.
Yes.
And did you see some of the football match from England?
No.
In the end, it was the same 1-1 or whatever. So they had to take
penalties
for open. And there were in the group of England, the boss, he chose five, and probably from the five, there were four black guys, young ones. There was one, and he was 20 or something. And then a few took them, and then he missed, or the keeper could block it. So they lost the card of the whatever. And I felt so for him, and this will stay with you forever. You're so young. And he cried. And then all of a sudden all his teammates flew to him and they embraced him. And there are photos on Facebook about the guy, the trainer, and he was embracing him and talking to him. And the young guy was holding on for dear life. He cried his eyes out. And the guy was, I can't tell. And he was holding him and like this, and come on, guy, it's okay. And then later on, I was so shocked. There was a flood of racist comments on his page, and through all England, they were so mad at all those black people. And then that's a flood, another flood at the same, almost at the same time as the flood, the physical flood in Europe, and then another flood came over there. He was awashed with love, with whatever. You are the best we have, and over and over and over. And all of a sudden, out of the ashes, this boy is rising. And it's a young one, and he has a lot of money. And it's known he already donated a lot of money to people in poverty. Mm. He's a beauty, and for me this is the same. You know, he's cut off by his knees, and then it's from the ash, he's rising. So talking about hope, it's wow.
And I guess that's kind of it. It is that, to be open to follow along the stream when it comes, right? That's what it's. That's what that is.
Probably it's about when you're so young, you can't receive the pain. In a way, maybe it could kill you. And that becomes an attitude, or it becomes an ideal. But now we're adults and we're able to stand in full blast, you know, with the right people around us and the willingness to scream it out.
A willingness to scream it out. Yeah. Maybe that's the perfect place to wrap this up.
Yes.
Let's scream it out, Micah.
It's almost 1 hour and a half. And I think, no one wants to listen to this.
You know, it's interesting. I get... I was talking to somebody the other week who said, oh, you and Frank just accompanied me on my walk. We had a lovely walk. And I went, oh, that's so lovely to know that I can accompany her on her walk along with Frank. And I was talking to a friend of mine the other day and a Swedish friend, and he said, I listened to your pod. And I was like, oh, you do? And he was like, yeah, I like it. So I was like, what is it you like? And he said, it's real conversations. And I went, yeah, that's what it is. It's real conversations. So you know, again, it isn't for everyone. It doesn't need to be for everyone. But for the people who hear it and feel that, oh, here's a real conversation, you know, join us. We'll tag along on your walk or when you're doing the dishes or whatever it is, you know, wherever you are as you're listening to this. So, there's value to it. If nothing else, just because of that, it's a real conversation. We have no clue at the start. We have no clue at the end. You know, it's like, but we sure do touch on a lot of interesting things and fascinating things and, you know, hard things and confusing things. And
yeah, and every time I'm so grateful for that you picked me out. And every time it's so heart opening. I'm mellow, you know. I feel seen. I really love to see you in your exploration. If this doesn't give hope, thank you so much, Helena, for this and for all that you're doing. You're a star.
As are you, and you're mine. You know, it's like you're mine. I'm so happy to have. You know, souls like you around. It's just, it's thrilling. So thank you, Micah, for another lovely conversation.
Thank you.